to talk about the Houston Rockets, who I don't love saying this, but they looked so good last year, and I didn't see that coming. But they did. And they kept the same roster continuity, which is what you do when you have a team as good as the Rockets were last year.
It's a new thing for them. As far as I know, they had a complete roster turnover following the Harden trade.
What Daryl Morey's been able to do with that roster is really something else. Because after Yao Ming and Tracy McGrady both went down, they just had nothing. They had a handful of nothing. Goran Dragic, Kyle Lowry, they had some other point guard. They had Luis Scola back when he was like a 20-point-a-game player.
Yeah, they had Scola. Yeah, I think Chuck was on that team. Yeah, Chuck the God was on that team. We got big love for Chuck Hayes over here.
Why do people keep giving him money?
He's a really, really good defender. At least he was. He was at that point. Now he's kind of a mascot, but no, he's a decent rebounder. He plays like 20 games a year. He's a reserve player. I don't actually think Chuck Hayes is very good. I just like to mess around with Chuck Hayes. He's funny to me. He has a mustache, but like before the mustache revival, you know, he's just a mook.
They maintain this roster continuity, and that's what you do when you have a season like they had last year. They had the second best record in the West last year, and Dwight Howard was never out there. They had Terrence Jones out for large swaths of time. They had PBev went down.
Monta Ennis was out for a while, wasn't he?
Right, yeah. No, they had this piecemeal team that James Harden somehow brought to 56 wins. If everyone stays together for this next season, if Dwight Howard is out there playing like new Dwight, not like old, amazing, stellar Dwight, but still one of the best defensive centers. Yeah, one of the best defensive centers in the league. If Terrence Jones continues on his trajectory of improvement, if Trevor Ariza settles in more, I just feel like this team has so many players coming back from injury and improving that they could be like a 64-win team. They might win.
I agree with you, but again, those are the two big question marks. One is players coming back from injuries, but also the fact that this is the Western Conference. However, I do want to get your take on whether the loss of Josh Smith is important, and if so, how important it is, whether he was a holdover or whether you think that he brought something to the team in particular, because I know that you and I are both cautious Josh Smith fanboys. Guarded, I suppose you could say.
You give me someone who's 6'9" and can fly through the air and block shots or slam it down, and I realize he's not really doing that at this point in his career. I'm going to love that guy. I thought Josh was really well built for that team. It's a shame to see him go. I sort of had this fetishization, this team, that they would get a really maybe like Brandon Wright type 4 who can really run and plays a 4 position, but can be like a speedier, faster than Josh Smith, who would play the 3, you know?
Jeez Louise.
I just think that the more different types of weird that you can throw at coaches, the better, right?
You really are married to this Josh Smith playing the 3 thing, aren't you?
Yeah. The big thing with Josh Smith is that it was a bigger deal that Houston lost him until they basically, for pennies on the dollar, got Ty Lawson. Right?
Yeah. The question that obviously somebody would counter that with is people said that was the big problem with him in Detroit, was that he was spending too much time at the 3 when he's more naturally a 4. Now, of course, we've talked about how that was a specific situation.
Do you remember those lob passes Josh Smith was throwing to Dwight Howard in multiple different series? Josh Smith.
Do you think Ty Lawson is that key, crucial third piece that
the Daryl Morey's been needed. Looking for?
Yeah, because I think that there's a sort of informal or maybe even formalized at this point theory that in the NBA, you know, you need 3. Do you think Ty Lawson's that guy?
Huh, that's a good question. I always imagined that if Houston landed a 3rd star, it would be at the 4 position. It would be Carmelo Anthony playing the 4. It would be Chris Bosh or Paul Millsap, someone like that.
Bosh would be even better, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think where you're going with this is that is Ty Lawson, he's certainly good enough or can be developed enough to be a third piece in that kind of triumvirate. However, do they need a 1 to be the third piece? Because then are you looking at a too many cooks in the kitchen situation?
Yeah.
Do you need to have that third piece be somebody who has to have the ball in his hand?
Yeah, exactly.
That's why I think the whole Bosch thing was so, in a certain sense, one feels at least some degree of either empathy or schadenfreude for the Houston Rockets fans, because in terms of a stretch guy who doesn't need to have the ball in his hands at all times to be effective and therefore doesn't overlap with Harden, Bosch was really a perfect fit for them.
Yeah, the way that I conceptualize the big three and how it works is that there's the big shooter, there's the big cutter, and there's the big superstar. If you apply that to, let's just grab the Celtics, the big superstar is Paul Pierce there, the big shooter is Ray Allen, and the big cutter is Kevin Garnett. But it doesn't have to be that sort of three, and then the shooter is a two. You can have Dwayne Wade be the cutter, and then Chris Bosh at the four be the shooter. Well, actually, the Boston Celtics look a lot more like the Spurs. You could even have a 3-4-5, like Parrish, Bird, and
McHale.
Yeah, Parrish is the shooter, Larry Bird is the superstar, and then Kevin McHale is the finisher. So you're missing something there, because the ball handler part, the ball handler component of that, is already fulfilled by James Harden, and the finisher is of course, going to be Dwight Howard. So now
I don't have as quite as complex a system, but I just think of it in terms of on ball and off ball. And
yeah, that other player should be a shooter.
Of course. So the same thing happens when you have two guys who need to have the ball in their hands to be effective. Now, of course, you can work it out. Miami was able to do that. I mean, Wade was a guy who needed the ball in his hands before LeBron showed up, but it turned out he could function otherwise. However, I'm wary of Ty Lawson's ability to fit into the offense that Houston has, just because what does he bring that they need is my question.
That's pretty much what I'm saying. Here's what I think might be interesting to see if Kevin McHale can pull off, because I feel like this might be the test of whether he's a good coach or a great coach. Can James Harden become the shooter component of that and not be the primary ball handling functionary? Can he become the shooter part of that triangle, but still be James Harden?
Do you want him doing that?
Well, that to me is part of the question. You only want him becoming that shooter if works.
If you have a point guard if you have a strict upgrade. There are only a few point guards, I would say. Well, I mean, we have a lot of point guards. There's a glut of them, but there aren't even at such an oversaturated position, there aren't that many one guards who I would rather have handling the ball primarily for my team than I would having James Harden even doing it, I think.
I could see Ty Lawson becoming the primary ball handler, but James Harden still being the primary passer.
Closer to a Parker Ginobili kind of thing, you say?
I could see Ty Lawson creating offense and screwing up the defense off of the dribble, hitting James Harden, and James Harden has like some type of good shot right now because of the offense that Ty Lawson created. And if he has that shot, he takes it because he's James Harden. And if he doesn't, he finds someone who's open also because he's James Harden.
It would take really good coaching, though, I would say, especially because it is a bit of a gadget offense. If I'm reading you correctly, it would be something close to the peak of the revamp, the Spurs 2.0 offense, where Parker was essentially running interference and finding Ginobili on the wing, who was, as Harden is, both a capable finisher, but also had this sort of arsenal of really tricky and clever passes.
Yeah, but a better version. I think that with the proper coaching, that could totally work. You start the ball off with Ty Lawson.
And so you can, in a certain sense, split the duties of point guard as well as primary perimeter scorer. I could see that working, but
it really would.
I think I have questions still about McHale.
Yeah.
I think McHale is a lot better than I thought he was. Yeah, because there were doubts about him, but I think he's proven to be a player's coach. I know that he's beloved by his players, but he's made head-scratching decisions in the past that have, I think, taxed teams he coaches.
I think that Kevin McHale has had a very serious and praiseable upward trajectory. I think there's a reality where Kevin McHale ends up being a really brilliant coach. I don't think that that's assured.
So we're talking about McHale's ability to create a very sophisticated, well-oiled offense that's based around bifurcated point guard duties between two primary ball handlers.
And the way that Kevin McHale is going to approach it is James Harden. That really is what makes sense.
The closest possible analog to Rich Harden, the former Oakland A's pitcher, to James Harden's game would be Ginobili. So I feel like the two of them are kind of naturally linked,
at
least in my mind, because they're the closest to each other. Talk to me about your appraisal of Lawson's capabilities in that other role. It would be a bit of a move for him, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be. And that's really what I think it would hinge on. I think that that's the better idea, though, is putting Ty Lawson into a position. Building around James Harden as the primary ball handler is an option to run a good offense. That was sort of brought to pass this year. I think that the idea of putting Ty Lawson into it, and rather than, you know, trying to reinvent the wheel, putting Ty Lawson in and sort of saying to Ty Lawson, okay, we really like your skill set. You need to learn how to do this as... You need to watch other models as far as your play style. You know? I'm trying to think of equivalents. The Derek Fisher-Kobe Bryant situation, that's not an equivalent. Because Derek Fisher is a spot-up shooter, and Ty Lawson is not all that great of a spot-up shooter.
Yeah.
Westbrook and Reggie Jackson.
It is a strange situation, and again, that's precisely the source of my trip. I think the fact that we are struggling to come up with analogs is itself, of course, the source of my trepidation,
right,
especially considering the fact that has Lawson provided a wealth of examples or proof or a body of evidence that he is the kind of player willing to
relegate,
adapt to it. Exactly. Well, because as far as I know, and I didn't watch too many Denver games, because I value my sanity and I value my mental health. As far as I know, though, he was the guy there and quite liked it.
Yeah, he was. He was either first or second in the league in passing one year. It was that year that George Karl just somehow... The year that George Karl somehow made the Nuggets a thing, Ty Lawson was like a really good point guard. The sort of model that Mike D'Antoni kind of made. I'm still stuck on this idea of the primary functional shooting guard. Having the superstar, I'm really stuck on the cutter sort of being a point guard and the superstar being a shooting guard, because I've yet to think of it.
I think this dovetails, of course, with what we were talking about earlier about the general trend towards blurring lines between position, to the point where, yes, James Harden is, of course, nominally two guard, but to only the most obtrusive viewers, you could see that the offense flowed through him in a kind of an irrefutable way. Of course, there have been other two guards who've done that. However, defined roles between the one and the two are
a thing of the past.
So if Lawson isn't the third guy in Houston, where do they end up?
If this doesn't work,
but then again, I think you and I would agree that even if this doesn't work...
But it doesn't
work,
crash and burn.
Yeah, even if this doesn't work, they're a good team.
Yeah.
If this works, they're sniffing the one seed, they're a two seed. If this works, i.e. if this gels...
I think if it works, that they're the team squaring off against the Cavaliers in the finals.
Yeah.
Like, really.
Even if it doesn't work, they've got enough really good basketball players on the floor at the same time to be a good team. So we'll say that this scenario will be if they don't harmonize quite perfectly, but they still perform competently. It what you might could say would be your kind of middle of the road turnout. Where does this team end in the Western Conference? Because, see, that's the biggest question for me, is that it would be as surprising for this team to be a two seed as it would be to be a five seed, just because of that conference. So where do you see this? How do you see this team doing, and where do you see them finishing if they are just good? If the synergy, I hate that word, is just good.
What I think you're saying is, what happens to this team if they don't think of a new revolutionary way to make Ty Lawson their third man, and he's just an upgrade at the one? If he's not the third star and he's just an upgrade at the one, how good are the Rockets?
Exactly. Yeah.
They're a conference finals team. You know, like the same as they were this year. I mean, their playing field, it somehow managed to get better. When you thought that the West wasn't going to be able to do that, it somehow came to pass. And I think that the other contenders, Okay, so the Golden State Warriors were so far and away better than everyone else that last year they just won. Like, they did what they did, and they won. But no one's going to say that the Spurs, having added LaMarcus Aldridge, aren't in that conversation anymore. The Clippers, putting together what is a really good bench, they're now in that conversation. And the Houston Rockets can't just waltz into the second seed anymore unless they make a significant enough upgrade that they warrant being in the same discussion as those two other teams, the Clippers and the Spurs.
Well, yeah, see, this is what I'm driving at is that I don't think Golden State will be a 67 team again next year. I think they'll be as good a team, but 67 wins is truly remarkable. I think that they've had, like everybody else who's really in that kind of top flight, they're looking around and they're looking in their neighborhood and people are getting better. And not only that, but they've had, the rest of those teams have had a year to sort of begin to understand or at least to get used to the Steve Kerr Warriors and who do play particular style or whatever. I mean, obviously everybody knew before this year and before whatever year that Steph Curry was going to be important to guard, but they have, what's the term? I guess blitzkrieg would be the word because they just came out firing so hard. So I don't think that they're going to be able to get to 67 wins again next year just because they, if only because
it could happen.
It could happen. They've got a really, really good team.
But I agree.
But they don't have that extra element of novelty, I guess is the word, because there's a momentum that's gained from that I think that they use to their advantage. However,
the other side of the coin there is...
What I'm driving at is that, again, sorry to interrupt, but what I'm driving at is that I don't think anybody would be flat-out surprised if Houston finished behind San Antonio, Golden State, and LA.
To me, those four teams, I think that choosing any of them in the West is a good choice. It's not exactly a toss-up. I think that if you had to choose one of them, who would you choose?
I lean on San Antonio because
to square up against the Cavs.
Betting
against San Antonio.
Yeah, don't ever bet against them. Don't ever bet against them. I've learned in
don't 15
bet
against
years,
San Antonio. Yeah.
Is that you never want to bet against San Antonio, especially not when they add a piece like Aldridge. However, I think that the same questions remain for LA as they always have, that they have probably the most talented basketball team.
They're the most talented team in the West.
If they don't have the most talent in their starting five, it's really, really close.
Yeah, their starting lineup was actually by far the best starting lineup in the league last year. Their plus minus was something like 9 points as opposed to the second best starting lineup.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's I wanted to hedge my bet, but the ability to translate that horsepower into forward thrust, if you will. I mean, they've always been good, obviously, but they haven't been able to take a team who usually puts out at the beginning of the game the most talented squad, at least in their half of the country. But they had nothing to come off the bench except for Crawford.
Yeah, they had Crawford, Turkoglu, Davis. I think they had one. Oh, they had Matt Barnes. Yeah, Crawford is the only good bench player there.
Yeah, he's really good. He's really, really good.
Yeah.
But he is a really good bench
player. Yeah, he's great.
So you see them going into this next year. You see them shoring up the two position, although I like those lineups they had with Redick out there, but maybe that's just because I want Redick to win. You know, Redick actually did an interview with, like, a Watch Aficionados website, in case anybody, and I don't think anybody in the world will be surprised by that.
Yeah.
Talking about Pate Philippe mechanical movement watches.
He went to Duke.
This will surprise nobody.
He went to Duke. That's all you have to say. Duke players, man.
He just seems like the type. Yeah. Yeah, smart guy.
Yeah.
So, wait, where did Hansbrough went to North Carolina, right?
In college.
That explains. See, there you go. I don't really have a horse in that race. Yeah. I don't really, no offense to North Carolina. But yeah, I don't really even follow college ball that much. Anyway, so what I'm saying is that you're looking at LA and you see that they look really scary because, like, what have they, I hate that. I hate calling teams scary also, but they've shored up the bench and they've, what's your opinion about it? I mean, they brought back the best things that they had going for them, and then they've really made significant demonstrable additions to be able to improve the kind of flagging area.
Honestly, I think the Clippers are going to be against the Cavaliers in the finals next year.
All right.
I think the Clippers are making it to the finals. Yeah, I just think that the only reason they fell apart against the Rockets is fatigue. If you look at the San Antonio Spurs and how they've managed to do what they've done, they've managed players' fatigues down to a T perfectly. And the Clippers did not have that luxury. Now they do.
Yeah, I like that you mentioned that they didn't have that luxury. It wasn't a case like the way that people talk about in Chicago with Thibodeau, where he ran his players into the ground like the really mean owner from the first part of Black Beauty. If anybody's seen that movie, shouts out to that movie. It's a really important movie to me. But rather, they simply didn't have the luxury of saying, you know what, Chris, why don't you just
take a seat.
Take five. Yeah, take five.
We're gonna let the coach's son play for a little bit.
We're gonna get Lil Rivers in here. We're gonna get intern Rivers in here.
even when he was playing well, he wasn't playing well. Even when people were like, maybe Austin Rivers isn't that bad, he was actually being bad and people just didn't realize it.
Yeah, no, he wasn't very good. I'm sure that there's also, well, actually, I'm not going to speculate on what it's like to be Doc Rivers' kid and play for him. I'm just glad that he got out of there. He got out of there, right?
No.
Oh, he's still there? Shit, are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, that's...
Dude, Doc Rivers is... I honestly, you said the word speculate. I can only speculate as to what the deal is there. I just don't know. I don't know. I figure it's got to be a nepotism thing.
Nah, it wouldn't be such naked nepotism.
Are you sure, though? Because Doc Rivers, as a GM, you know, he does some questionable things.
Yeah, he does have total control, but... Well, I don't know. It's...
Do you think Austin Rivers was generating interest anywhere?
Let me see.
Do you think that he would have signed somewhere else if he hadn't signed with the Clippers?
Maybe in China.
Yeah, I meant in the NBA. I mean, I feel like he might not even...
He's a really mediocre free throw shooter.
I can't speak to that. I'm not really sure.
Did you know that? I'm looking at his stats right now. Hold on. That's actually really interesting. I always find that, you know, it's not really interesting unless you find such a mundane statistic interesting. But
no, dude, free throws are... I love free throws. I just love them.
You're just all about them, man?
I'm not even kidding. Players who hit their free throws...
This guy's not lying, man. He's got a bunch of posters of Nick Van Exel standing 5 feet behind the line in his room.
Who?
Nick Van Exel, the god, used to stand 5 feet.
Oh, no, no, not who? Are you saying that
you
I
do?
Have those?
I'm saying that you.
Oh,
do.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, of course you do. It's not. It's not even a bunch of posters. It's just one poster, but you have a bunch of copies of it. Everybody knows that.
No, I.
You went and had them done at Kinko's.
I took them down recently. Actually, now I just have. I just have one poster of Nick Van Exel, but it's the only piece of furniture in my room.
Yeah, well, that yeah. And you had it done, so it was like the upholstery. It was like a face cake, but it was a couch.
Yeah, it's a giant beanbag with Nick Van Exel's face.
Yeah, and his headband. So Austin Rivers is a career 62% free throw shooter from the shooting guard.
What the hell is he doing, dude? What the hell is he doing in the NBA?
It's like Sagana Jop level.
What the hell is he doing in the NBA? That
out,
it has to be nepotism.
Eating apps, I don't know.
Have you seen that vine of Griffin hucking that shot just into the rafters?
Maybe. I watch a lot of vines, man.
Time out on this podcast. Go look up Griffin Austin Rivers vine.
All right, I will. I think we're in a little bit better. Wait, his impression?
Yeah, his impression.
That's like a minute, 16 seconds, isn't it?
No, the impression, it's just a vine. It's 7 seconds.
Oh, okay, yeah, here we go, I see it.
Who are you impersonating right now?
I remember watching. I was watching that series, the Houston LA series, from this little rinky dink motel room in Watertown, New York, after getting drunk at a Ruby Tuesday. I was like, does he have Parkinson's or something? I thought he had like a protein deficiency or some sort of really serious mineral deficiency.
Yeah.
Or like botulism. Oh, yeah, God. I think actually we might be in a little bit better shape if I do spend a little bit more time just cracking bullshit jokes.
Wait, what?
We might benefit if I just kind of crack more shitty jokes like this.
Seriously, that's what we're missing?
I'm kind of a Jermaine Crawford. I'm like a Jamal Crawford.
Yeah, but that means, oh god,
I'm really good at 4-point play.
He's the third best scorer on that team, I guess.
Let me see. Yeah, I think he must have been.
It wasn't DeAndre. Yeah, we were talking originally about the Rockets. So, yeah.
Look, man, my mind works in flashes. I'm like Brunelleschi that way.
I don't know. Maybe our next podcast is about the Clippers or something. I don't know.
We're just going to talk about basketball, man.
Wait, what?
We're just talk about basketball.
Yeah.
It's the generalized basketball podcast.
Let's just talk about a basketball. Basketball is like they're spherical.
Who is a basketball?
Charles Barkley. Charles Barkley is a basketball.
Whoa, have you ever seen Charles Barkley? Oh, wait, I have. Okay, so I think he's not. I think they're two different people.
Who?
Charles Barkley and a basketball.
Oh no!
Have you ever seen Donald Trump in a basketball in the same place?
I'm
not. I'm just saying. Just teach the controversy.
Man.
Teach the fucking controversy is what I'm saying. Have you ever seen Bruce Willis's head in a basketball in the same place? Have you ever seen Bruce Willis's head and Donald Trump in the same place?
Have you ever seen Donald Trump's shorn testicles and Bruce Willis's head?
Teach the controversy.
Place.
Look, the signs are there, man. That's another good question. See, this is what this podcast is really about. Have you ever are you sure that the basketball is not a reptilian from the center of the earth?
Yeah.
If you pay really close attention to the eyelids of a basketball, you can see that there's a third one which protects their eyes from shields their eyes from the hot molten rock at the center of the earth where they live.
I can't even imagine being someone who thinks stupid things like that. I feel like some people are so upset about people who are like, man, 9/11 was an inside job because there was essential patriotism on the inside. But I just don't like it because it's stupid. It's not the conclusion that you should be coming to. You've come to this conclusion, and the people who are like, okay, 9/11 was an inside job, they have this feeling like, oh man, I know something that other people don't, but they're just so wrong.
Well, what it is it's evidence of the human mind's natural inability to deal with complexity. And when they encounter complexity, they solve it, cancel it, they forestall any kind of abstract thinking by leaping to some sort of unswerving answer. Don't do what you're doing.
It is nice to be able to just chuck pieces of audio.
We're going to probably just toss that one. We're going to probably toss that.
I mean, it makes you...
It's really great. I wish you could do that in real life.
Dude, that would be...
For instance, I would chuck almost everything you say. No, but...
Yeah. I feel like that would be a good Adam Sandler movie.
What?
Adam Sandler can edit his own audio in real time. Ayy.
And then it would be... They always use the damn Hall of the Mountain King music when it's like Tim Allen tiptoeing through a dark yard when he's on his way to his shed so that he can hide a bunch of deer meat or something. I don't know. That was just a Christmas movie in my head.
A bunch of slaughtered Blitzen just like strung up by his antlers.
You know, Tim Allen got arrested for bringing 5 pounds of cocaine on an airplane, or attempting to. He did not make it to the airplane. For those of you who aren't familiar with cocaine, 5 pounds is what we would call a fucking lot of cocaine.
Dude, Tim Allen, he was...
That's not... I didn't make that up. That happened.
I know, man. He's such a... He's like the guy from Full House, you know? He's
Dave
just...
Coulier or John Stamos?
No, the other one. I have the Full House theme song stuck in my head now.
Didn't watch it as a kid, only watched The Animal Planet. So, talking about...
We're talking about the Rockets. Yeah.
The Rockets. So, all right. So, Lawson... Whether Lawson is that third piece is a good question. What else?
I really like how Terrence Jones has improved and changed his game to be malleable around what they really need him to be. He's developed a 3-point jump shot. That's the big thing. And he's become a good defender. He's not good enough at either to be a unicorn, but he has a 3-point jump shot and he plays defense.
Yeah.
He's a horse. He is kind of squatty.
He's a Shetland. So... What do you think, you know, we were talking about the kind of abstract and tedious subject of team atmosphere earlier, but what do you think Maury Ball does for a team's kind of chemistry? You know, insofar as there's that sort of running line about Maury treats his players like assets. Or do you think that that doesn't matter, or it's not worth talking about? Because I know that you and I have had conversations about to what degree, what are kind of usually called intangibles. Well, ever those are actually really boring to talk
about.
No,
I think that's a conversation worth having, because earlier...
Oh, yeah, who's the HBIC on that team?
Right, that's exactly what I was going to say. Is it doesn't seem like Daryl Morey gives a sh** about having someone in that locker room who isn't a statistical boon, but is just, okay, a good player.
Another line of questioning that we can open up someday is, does Daryl Morey like basketball?
He likes basketball spreadsheets.
Is Daryl Morey real, or is Daryl Morey actually an acronym for a computer program that's based in Langley, Virginia, and they just got Nerd Elvis to pretend to be him? Daryl Morey is a drone. You just heard it from here.
Have you seen Moneyball?
I read it.
I guess it's a book.
Yeah, I read the book.
I haven't done either. I'm just putting that out there. I feel like I should have.
So we'll see where you go with this. This should be good.
Did you ever read...
You already asked me that. Okay.
Okay, actually, I'm going to go somewhere else with this. I was going to talk about a story where Monta Ioannis was talking about James Harden and Dwight Howard not eating dinner with the rest of the team when they went on the road. They would go out by themselves and eat McDonald's.
Well, how elitist of them.
Did you ever...
Yeah, I heard of that story, yeah.
I was thinking, earlier we were talking about getting a third star component. No, I remember. We were talking about on the Pacers, what? What? No, I am. Okay. The microphone's on. I mean, it's fine. I can edit all this out. I'm streaming. Yeah, that was fun. I sort of like want to keep that. Part of me wants to keep it.
Oh yeah, by the way, you're getting swatted. I, as long as you keep the part about where I say that you're getting swatted, you know what that is, right?
No.
Getting swatted is this thing. So you know, when nerds are streaming on video games, what you do is while they're streaming, you call like a bomb threat into their house. So the SWAT team shows up and like beats their door down.
Does that actually happen?
It's a thing. You can go to YouTube. Uh-huh. On YouTube, you can type in streamer getting swatted. It's the funniest shit I've ever seen. And there's like a video of somebody doing it just because some guy on Call of Duty was being annoying, so we fucking swatted him.
I can't.
Like locked down the entire city block and pointed a gun at his little brother because he was getting trolled on Xbox.
Dude, that's insane. I can't believe that's a thing. I'm going to totally look that up.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing that nerds do to each other. I think it's really, really awful to do, but it's really, really funny.
I mean, how do you get
Skype.
How do you get away
you
with that
Skype.
If you're calling?
You call Skype. You can use Skype and get a spoofer. They can't track it.
I feel like you could do it on Tor really easily.
You have to. It takes a little work, but not much.
You could do it on Tor really easily.
You're just watching somebody on the stream. You're just like, I'm going to this guy's day up. Just like some guy playing Counter-Strike. You don't even need to use Tor would be really safe, but all you need to do is just get a random IP generator. They can't track those. They can track them if they try really, really, really hard, but most people get away with it. Hell, you could do it from a payphone.
That's what I was originally thinking, is you should do it from a payphone.
You can do it from a burner phone. You can do it from your friend's phone.
You could do it from the streamer's phone. You could hack into the mainframe.
Hack into the mainframe. Well, whatever. Super nerd, super secret nerd tricks .xclx
.onion, man. You can only view it in Tor, those onion websites.
Dude, you're really deep web, dude. I just want you to know that.
The Silk Road 2.0 is apparently even cooler. I haven't bought anything off of it, though.
Yeah, I always sketch about it just because why'd you get arrested? I tried to buy drugs on the internet, you know?
Yeah,
you keep the steel to make them feel like chinchilla in the heat.
Oh, God. What? Chinchilla in the heat. What does that even mean?
No, I was in the shower the other day for some reason. I was remembering from the first verse of Drop It Like It's Hot.
Yeah.
Killer with the beat. I got killers in the street with the steel to make you feel like chinchilla in the heat. That's actually a really dope line because it's, all right, I got the steel, got a gun, but I'm going to smoke you and put you on blast, put that ass on fire. I'm going to make the motherfucking beef cook. I'm going to make you feel like you're chinchilla in the heat. Chinchilla fur coat in the heat. Very fucking warm.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm actually really good at doing that shit. I kind of want to have... I write a lot of essays. I write private essays about that.
You know who wrote a lot about hip-hop? David Foster Wallace.
Huge Pac fan. Look it up. Carlos the Jackal.
Yeah.
You know his real name is Ned?
I don't...
His given name...
Carlos Mencia?
Okay, yeah.
Is that a real thing?
Why do you think that he doesn't have a career anymore?
Oh, God damn. I didn't know I could hate him anymore.
Because everybody learned his name was
Ned. I don't know, dude. Now, you know, you had me at first, and now I'm not sure I believe you.
Let's use Wikipedia, because we're not doing anything anyway. Carlos Mencia, born Ned Arnel Mencia, is a Honduran-born American comedian.
Ned.
Mencia was born in San Pedro Sula, Honduras, the 17th of 18 children. His mother, Magdalena Mencia, was Mexican, and his father, Roberto Olness, was a Honduran whose distant ancestors included immigrants from Germany, England, and the Cayman Islands.
Damn.
He went by the Holness name until he was 18.
Yeah. I do want to get into this Rockets conversation. Yeah, whatever, though. We should probably just end up talking about the big threes. I had an article that's Big Three Part One. I'm in the middle of... I have a whole conceptualization, coaching, and how to build around particular big threes and stuff. I have a really, really good understanding of what it is to have a big three, actually, though. But